On today's episode of The Good Word, I talked to Dan Titus and Ice Young about the Phoenix Suns making a bid for Jimmy Butler finally and what that looks like. Scottie Pippen is the man on drugs. We also talk about Kobe Bryant's 81-game anniversary, the latest on the Unrivaled series, and NBA beef. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A couple of bits of business before we get into the show today. Don't forget to subscribe to The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a 5-star rating or review. We appreciate all of those things. Today, of course, it is Wednesday, which means we are joined by Ice. And first, we are joined by my man, Dan Titus, still living high off of that Philly pack. How you doing, man?
I'm feeling good, man. I am living a little bit off that Philly pack. I mean, that's the only thing Philly has to look forward to at this point. So hopefully they come correct against the Commanders. I mean, I think we touched on it last week, but like Josh Harris, man, like this man goes out. Like, how can you have any affiliation with Philly? Like, how can you go buy a team and then like still rep the Sixers while they're still like the conflict of interest to me?
Are y'all
is just,
booing
like,
that man
so
when y'all
mad.
See him when y'all see him in that arena?
On site, for real. Oh, on site. Have to.
Well, are you booing him because he owns the Washington football team? Are you booing him because he owns the Philadelphia 76ers?
Yeah, he could be booed for both, man. That's all encompassing booing right there. Like, he's not doing anything positively for the city of Philly right now.
Ouch. And then he tried to move y'all out of the city too? Didn't he try to move
you know what
y'all
saying?
Like, to
like we don't
want to
play in Camden, yo. Like, what is you doing? Like, nah. Doing too much.
Always doing too much. Do you remember the day of the Verizon shutdown or like when all the towers went down? Or maybe y'all don't have a Verizon phone because I do.
I had T-Mobile for a minute. I think I got Verizon now.
No, this is like literally like 3 months ago.
I don't know. Maybe it didn't affect me out here.
No, because I was in Philly for media day for the 76ers and all the Verizon towers went down. So unless you had Wi-Fi or was connected to Wi-Fi, you had no type of service. So I'm trying to call an Uber. I'm trying to walk to different zones. I have no idea that this is like a Verizon thing.
Right.
I'm thinking this is like, man, I'm in Camden, New Jersey, and I'm trying to find like an Uber, but my phone isn't working. That was some of the scariest broad daylight shit you will ever see in your life. You don't realize why your phone isn't working. It doesn't make sense. We're going to get to people who don't make sense a little bit later. Scottie Pippen, talking to you. But before we begin, or as we begin, it was a little trade last night that seemed to indicate, at least to me and a few other people, that the Phoenix Suns are very serious about being in the Jimmy Butler business. That they are very, very serious. They traded their first round pick in 2031 to get 3 first round picks from the Utah Jazz that are from various teams. Pretty much it opens up the ability to me, it seems, to trade those first round draft picks to the Miami Heat for Jimmy Butler. And whatever iteration of whatever type of deal, I've heard a million different things, Dan, about what this deal could look like and when this deal could be consummated. I would not be surprised if this deal was consummated over the weekend on Sunday while your Eagles are playing, so you might not see it. But were you surprised to see that last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is every time you trade picks and it doesn't include players, like I'm intrigued. I'm like, okay, what's the bigger move here? And I think it's important that you mention that it's a 2031, but that 2031 pick that the Jazz acquired is going to be unprotected. So essentially, this is a Utah bet on the Suns are going to be terrible in 6 years. And if you look at the Suns roster, it probably is. They're the second oldest team in the league right now. And at that point, if you look at the Suns squad side of this, they had only one pick until 2031. So now this gives them a little bit more leverage and opportunity to, let's call it optionality, to be able to make other moves, right? And so this could be enough to get Jimmy. They could also, you know, the other domino that needs to fall here is that Bradley Beal needs to agree to, you know, whatever trade he wants to go to, whatever destination, he needs to waive that no trade clause.
Right.
But at least it's it sets them up with enough assets to at least make a move for Jimmy.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to look it up because I had it written down. I had it written down somewhere like how the picks are going to be allocated and everything.
Yeah,
else.
So
like
it's 2025, 27, and 29. And it's all of the Utah picks were from the Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert trade. So yes. They'll have the least
favorable.
The Suns will get the least favorable of all of those draft picks.
They'll be the least favorable of 27 and 29. And this year as well. You're right. Least favorable of all 3 years. So that will be, like, Danny Ainge is trying his very best to pull a Sam Presti. But we know Danny Ainge ain't going to be using these picks. By and large, these picks will be used in a trade for somebody else. Whether it could be a superstar, like it could be, you know, the Cooper flag of the time, the Cooper flag of that particular season. But by and large, when you see future picks being acquired, that's why I'm not too worried about Oklahoma City having all the draft picks in the future because, A, the roster only holds so many guys. You can't use all the picks, but you can aggregate these picks for players on rookie contracts. That sort of resets the clock because we know Oklahoma City is a low revenue team. They don't want to go into the tax. They don't want to go into the aprons. So they're going to have to keep resetting their clock and hopefully for their sake, staying competitive around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren and everything else. I know we just went down a little bit of a rabbit hole, but for the Suns, this presents a path to get Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler is King Troll. He was wearing some shoes last night in their game against Portland that had Phoenix Suns colors. It looks very much like when Jimmy Butler says it's time to go. And it is more than time to go there. It looks very much like the Suns will be willing to give him a 2-year extension to pay him the money that the Miami Heat will not pay him. The question I have for you, like, because here's what I've heard, also heard as I turn it over, Dan. The Milwaukee Bucks could very well be involved. I've heard that Bradley Beal could wind up being rerouted to Milwaukee. I've heard that he could also stay in Miami, even with that hefty salary, but having those first round picks as sweetener. I've heard the Toronto Raptors could be. There's different iterations of this trade that could happen for teams that want to get in for salary cap relief, or they want to be a little more competitive, or they want to throw picks in. Like, this is such a huge and complicated trade that it could form many different iterations between now and Sunday. And I think that's the intriguing thing because I do think there's a buzzer on this, right?
Yeah.
And I think there has to be a point where you have to say, all right, whatever the trade is, we're moving and whoever's in is in.
Yeah, this is going to have to be a multi-team deal here because I don't know if Bradley Beal necessarily, I think it's more Pat Riley. I don't know if he wants to take Bradley Beal at this point, but the Milwaukee Bucks have shown interest in Bradley Beal back when he was on the trade market. And then also, you look at where the Bucks are, Chris Middleton isn't the guy that he was or what he needs them to be a real championship contending team. I don't know that Bradley Beal stepping in there necessarily puts them there either, but it's a better bet than Chris Middleton.
It's a better fit. Beal's a better fit in Milwaukee playing with Giannis and Dame than he is in Phoenix.
Totally agree. And so now, where does Middleton go in that? Because the other side of this is like Miami can't really afford to tank or else, you know, their 2026 pick becomes unprotected to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Or 2025, excuse me. So each team kind of has their own nuance of what they need to do and what they need to accomplish. And with so much money and the amount of players and the marquee names that are attached to this, this is going to be very complicated. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be settled by Sunday. Like the way that the Suns made this move, that's only going to facilitate, let's get this deal done. If you look at the Miami Heat, they've been vocal about, we just need to get this distraction away from the team. They're 21-21 hovering around 500 at this point. Yep. So, yeah, both teams need to make moves. And I think this is going to happen sooner rather than later.
We're having a lot of discussions about teams that are 500. It's amazing that we are. Like, the one thing I will say about the Suns is this, Dan. When Kevin Durant plays, I believe they are 21-10, right? They're 20-12, excuse me. They're 20-12. They lost to Cleveland on Monday, I believe. They're 20-12 when he plays. That's a pace that says, oh, you're the second, third best team in the Western Conference. The problem is Kevin Durant is 36 years old, and he's got these injuries, not injuries, Dan, that are in his like near past, but they're injuries that are on his body throughout the course of his life. You know what I'm saying? The Jones fracture from 2014-15, mm-hmm. the Achilles from 2019, the MCL, I think, in 22.
Now he's got the calf, the nagging calf thing.
Yeah, so it's like the Suns are going all in. Like we talked about Golden State not going all in. Matt Ishbia is saying all money and even more. When you add Jimmy Butler, let's just assume the trade is happening. If you add Jimmy Butler, when you add Jimmy Butler to Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, and they added Nick Richards last week in a small trade that I think could actually wind up paying some dividends for them, how do you see this working out for them on the floor, assuming this gets done?
I mean, I love it from a defensive standpoint on the wing. I mean, getting Jimmy Butler as a defender there that they don't currently have. I mean, right now, who's their best wing defender? Grayson Allen, maybe.
Yeah, like, might be. And You got to beware of them lethal weapons.
Yeah. But like the bigger question to me is like, what are they going to do in the front court? Like acquiring Nick Richards was a good move. But if you're the Suns, you're going to try to do as much as you can to not give up all of these three future firsts for Jimmy Butler. If you can give two out and then maybe you can flip a future first and Nurkic for somebody else,
yeah,
then maybe you can fortify that front court and actually have a decent chance at going for this. Because right now, as currently constructed, Nick Richards isn't going to be enough to hold down that front court with Jimmy Butler to actually be a real contender that's going to compete with the Thunder, the Houston Rockets, the Memphis Grizzlies, the Denver Nuggets. Like, no chance. So, yeah, if I'm the Suns, I would be trying to whatever I can do to move two of those firsts, get Jimmy Butler, maybe attach some players to that, and then also, you know, try to make that move for Nurk and a future first to get somebody else better in that front court that can actually play.
That's a good point. You don't want to trade all of your assets in this. This also opens up their ability to trade, you know, their first because of the Stepien rule. You cannot trade consecutive year first round picks. Ted Stepien was the previous owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers in the 80s, and he wound up trading consecutive first-round picks, and the league had to step in and say, no, we got to stop you. We have to save you from your own stupidity, from your own desperation. Nurk has a year left on his deal after this year. I think he's at $19 million, which sounds like a lot, but that's actually a lot more palatable for franchises to take on. It's not an option, so it's not anything you can necessarily – he can go into free agency. It's not an opt-out or anything like that. It's guaranteed he's going to be in it. And that could be salary cap relief beyond next season or an expiring contract that you can sort of flip into, you know, next season or the season after. So that's fascinating in itself. And the point that you made about Jimmy Butler on the wing, it enables KD to play 3-4 defensively. Jimmy can play 3-4 defensively. Bradley Beal is a smallish 6-3 in a way that when you have Booker, Beal, and KD defensively, that's not going to scare you so much. No. You add Jimmy Butler to that, then that makes you a lot more formidable because he's so versatile, because he can play anything from 2 to 4 on a defensive end. He takes a lot of pressure off of those other guys. I'm fascinated by what this looks like and the fact that when Jimmy wants to be somewhere, you get a motivated Jimmy. Yeah. And you get a fun Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is what the Suns need to do in an all-in scenario. Like, you're wearing the Antas with the Phoenix colors. Like, he wants to be there. When Jimmy wants to be somewhere, he's a different type of player. And if they can get playoff Jimmy inserted with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, someone that really hasn't really shown enough in the playoffs to really get over that hump, I mean, I think this move could get them there, assuming they could actually do something to fortify the front court.
Agreed. So as we transition, let me say this. I rag on Scottie Pippen a lot, okay? He's been somewhat of a punching bag. I'm from Detroit. Y'all know where I sit on that. Scottie Pippen, if you believe, he's one of the 75 greatest players of all time. In his day, was one of the more unique players. He was 6'7". He could handle. He could pass. Most importantly, he could defend a bunch of positions, and he knew how to play next to the greatest superstar of all superstars of all time, Michael Jordan. An indispensable piece by and large, to those six championships. Now that we got that out the way, is this man out of his damn mind? Like, I'm very curious because he went on the interview, Scottie, because Scottie Pippen changes his story like more than anybody I've ever been around in my life. I don't know if anybody's noticed that. First is Michael Jordan's the greatest. Now it's LeBron James is the greatest. Now it's this, now it's that. Whatever it is, right? He went on some interview and he talked about, he said some crazy things, Dan Titus, all right? He said that Michael Jordan wouldn't win six titles without me, but I would win six titles regardless. He also said that that NBA owners would pick him over LeBron James for the length and duration of career and franchises because, you know, I wouldn't leave. I wouldn't run and go somewhere.
That's looking pretty good, Scotty.
Yeah. Trust me. I've been mocking Scotty for years. I mock Scotty playfully because that's the one time that the child in me, that the fan in me, can really come out. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The fan of me from the bad boy days, I'm petty as hell. I will always be petty, no matter what type of professionalism I will show today. You can't tell me, Benny, in 1989 or 1991 right. to be professional. Absolutely not. That man is Sitting Bull, Dan Titus. That man had a migraine headache, and I've had a migraine headache before. That it ain't fun. But that man was Sitting Bull in a game seven.
Game seven?
During the Eastern Conference Final. A game they weren't going to win anyway. I need people to stop saying that. They weren't going to win that game. Anyway, they were down 29 points in the third quarter. Scottie Pippen ain't making that up. But, and then he also refused to come into a game in the Eastern Conference semifinals against the Knicks in the series. You were down 2-0. Why is he talking right now, Dan Titus? Is this man on drugs?
The first thing that comes to my mind is like Blue Streak when Dave Chappelle is sitting behind the dumpster. He's like saying whatever about Miles Logan. And he's just like, I don't know, man. He high. So, you know, smoking that shit. And like, that's the only thing I can come back to because where is this coming from? You said it. Like, this dude's story flip-flops like every 5 years. It's like, oh, Mike is the greatest. Oh, now GMs will pick me over LeBron. Like, what is you talking about, bro? Like, Scottie's a great player, top 75 for sure. But to say that you're going to get six rings and you don't need Mike, like, come on, bro. We saw it before. What happened in 94? What happened in 94, 95 when Jordan wasn't playing basketball? Or 93, 94 when Jordan
Both
wasn't playing
years.
Ball?
Both years.
Both years. Like, you were an all-star, cool. But, like, if you look at any advanced data, if you look at anything, just look at his numbers with Jordan off the floor. They're fine. You know, 20 points, like, cool. But, like, you're not that guy. You've never been that guy. Every time you've been put in that star role, you have been a middling all-star. Nothing more. Not superstar. Middling all-star. So, yeah, I don't know what Scotty's on. Maybe he's mad that his son was messing around with his ex-wife. Like, I don't know. Like, Jordan's just tortured this man through his whole career. And he's just mad and salty about it. Now he's just... I don't know, saying wild stuff just to get attention. But, like, I don't get it, bro. Like, LeBron, no one's ever picking you over LeBron. Stop it.
No one. And people can say, oh, Vinny, you're a critic of LeBron. You're like, look, dog, LeBron is maybe at worst the third best player we've ever seen in our entire lifetimes. Right? Right?
Yeah.
Like, there are some people who will make the case for first. I will never do that. There are people who will make the case for second. I sit there. And there's people who will make the case for third. I'm willing to listen to that too. But ain't nobody picking Scottie Pippen over even a lesser version of LeBron James, right? I'm taking 40-year-old LeBron James over the best of Scottie Pippen. The absolute best. 93, 94, Scottie, you know, high off the hog and it's my team now and everything else. I'm taking 40-year-old LeBron James over that version of Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen got his jewelry courtesy of Air Jordan Jewelers. That's where he got his rings. All right. Michael Jordan could have won with damn near anybody. He just happened to win with Scottie. And for people who say Michael Jordan never won a playoff series until Scottie Pippen got there, Scottie didn't barely even played in that playoff series against the Cleveland Cavaliers. All he needed was a dude to average 10 points. That's what Scottie did. Like,
the squad was great. Like, he had two different iterations of six good teams. Like, Horace Grant was good. Mm-hmm. B.J. Armstrong played his role. I mean, everybody, it was just a good unit that was, like, elevated by the greatest player of all time. remove him from that equation, and you have a two Eastern Conference semifinal exits.
You have like, you have Scottie Pippen on the bench wearing Air Jordan 10s doing come back. Please come back. Right. I can't handle it. I pleading. Can't do it. Or Scottie in Portland that says, you know what, y'all? How about in the game seven, we just go cold from the field in L.A. and I let Kobe cross me and over.
Young Kobe just give it to the whole squad.
Works. The works. How you up 17 in the fourth quarter and you give it up? I don't get it. I really don't get it. I wish Scottie the best. I would actually invite Scottie on this podcast to sort of talk this out because clearly he needs someone to talk
to. He needs intervention.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. He needs a real life intervention, and we need to like nail down exactly what his issues are with whomever they are. We need to nail them down. But you mentioned Kobe Bryant. When we come back, we got something Kobe Bryant just for you. Back here on The Good Word with Dan Titus. Dan, today, I'm not sure if people know this. It is, you know, January, what,
22nd.
Mm-hmm. So January 22nd, 2006. I'll remember where I was because I actually attended an NBA game that night because I was in college and I got some free tickets, like all the way up in the nosebleed.
What a right? W. Oh, my God.
I thought I saw... Oh, this is going to be the highest scoring game of the night. Tracy McGrady of the Houston Rockets scored 40 on the Detroit Pistons. I was in college. I got some free tickets. I went. That wasn't even half of the highest scoring game that night because Kobe lit up the Toronto Raptors for 81 big of them things, right? 28 of 46 from the field, great. 7 of 13 from three. 18 of 20 free throws in the game that they were down by like 15 in the second quarter or whatever. Like, what do you remember from that game or even that period of Kobe Bryant?
So I was in college too, and I remember the game because I was surprised that the Raptors were smoking them. Mm-hmm. They were down by like 18 going into the third, and Kobe was having this really good game, like just efficient as hell. I remember he was like, had an active streak of the most free throws made for franchise history or something that, like 60 something in a row. But then when it turned to the third quarter, yo, you just saw this different, like something snapped in Kobe because he was put on the clinic in the first half, but like it was mostly like attacking the basket, mid range, going to the line. He started just launching from three. And I remember the one shot that he had over Mo Pete, and I think there was somebody else that was trailing it. He pump faked twice and like hit this ridiculous shot. And it was like, all right, this guy's not going to miss the rest of the game. And for him to go on a span, like I think he scored 55 in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah.
He scored like 23 in 9 minutes. It was like I was witnessing, like I've only seen like probably two or three 60 point performances before that. And Kobe had done it earlier that year.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a stretch of Kobe's career that I was like, I remember him giving like, any given night, he's giving you 40.
Right.
And he only did that a few times, I think, in that span. But I think he ended up averaging 43 over the course of that month. But I think he had dropped 50 two games before that, like 48. Kobe was so locked in at that point. I was like, yo, this guy might actually score 100. Because there was a time he dropped 62 in like three quarters. And he was like, nah, don't put me in.
And sat out. And did not play. Like in the fourth quarter, like I'm looking at Kobe, I'm on Kobe's basketball reference page. And just from this season alone, I'm counting from all the way down. He literally, Dan, had, if I'm counting right, like 23 games of 40 points or more that season. Like, the binge that he was on, don't get me wrong, unabashed chuck, right? Man was chucking like it was no tomorrow. But when you're on a team, as I look at this box score and I remember this Lakers team, Lamar Odom, who was no aggressive offensive player, really good all-around player, but no aggressive guy. Smush Parker, who we got all the jokes for.
Smush.
Kwame Brown, who we got all the jokes for.
Chris Mim,
Devin George, Luke Walton, Sasha Vujacic, Brian Cook, and some chap named Devin Green who played all of 4 seconds in that game. Maybe when Kobe came and sat out, Devin Green came and sat and played in. That's like a trivia question. But I remember looking at, like, I was on YouTube earlier just to, like, refresh my memory.
Yeah.
I remember him going to the basket a lot. You know what else I saw a lot of in that game, Dan? A lot of long twos.
A lot of twos
that were, as much as he shot 13 threes, he took, like, another three or four 20-footers that was, like, a foot or two in front of the line. Like, he was just, I have a saying, Dan, there's some players who are parched and some players who are thirsty. That man needed shots like he was in the Sahara Desert and water was a mirage. He was like, bet, we down 16, we down 18. Get to fire
y'all,
away.
Y'all ain't touching the rock. Just give it to me. I'll
you got a better chance
you.
Of touching rock than touching the rock that night. Ain't no touching the ball when Kobe's on a bender like that. I will say this, Dan. I'm going to see if you rock with me. He's not a better scorer than Michael Jordan because Michael was a much more efficient scorer. He got to all the spots and everything else. Kobe was a better deep range shooter. So I think that made him a better binge scorer, if you would say. Like, Kobe lacked conscience in a way that even Michael Jordan, who's a total basketball sociopath, right?
Yeah.
Kobe's a different type of, like, three people on me, I'm shooting. Mike might give that thing up and try to get it back and relocate. Kobe like, man, I'm not passing to these dudes. They might do something stupid like dribble. No.
I mean, so I don't know if I could go that far, but I think it's very, very close. Because, like, Mike never touched 70, right?
And for Kobe to go get 80. 69 was the highest that Mike had. He 16, and that was an overtime game, I want to say, against Cleveland in 1990.
But if you look at over the, you know, totality of both of their careers, I think Jordan's got way more 40-point games and 30-point games and all that. But I think the way that Kobe got his tend to be, like, more difficult. Like, he made hard shots look easy. Jordan did, too. But as you said, like, he would, like, you know, reset, get the ball back, do whatever. But, like, where Kobe would be, like, pump fake, pump fake, pump fake, spin move, pivot, fade away in the corner, makes it. And it's crazy because I think it kind of revived Jalen Rose when he was just in the name of basketball circles, just because, like, he got cooked so bad that to only make a commercial later about that was just like, that was one of the best ESPN commercials they ever made.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 81 Olives.
Yeah.
I think Kobe, the difference between Kobe and Mike, at least from a scoring standpoint, was this for me. Kobe could make any shot. Because he would take any shot. Like you said, three guys on him, pump fake, whatever. He would take any shot, miss any shot. Mike always got the shot he wanted. Mike would pick a spot on the floor.
Yeah.
And I'm getting there in one dribble or one and a half dribbles or two dribbles. If I'm getting to the basket, I'm getting there. He was just so much more athletically gifted than Kobe Bryant, in my opinion. You know, he had bigger hands. He was quicker. He could jump higher. You know, all of that stuff. Like, Kobe was more... Kobe had to rely more on, I won't say trickeration, because that's demeaning, but Kobe had to rely more on the exact footwork and playing the angles the right way. Michael is like, man, look, I'm getting there and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, I have the big joker. If you ever played spades, I got the big joker on my head and I'm throwing it down and I don't care what you have. I have the big joker and I'm not worried about it because I also have the little joker. I don't think Kobe had big and little joker all the time.
No. But I think also, if you look at the way Kobe won those two championships after the three-peat with Shaq, that was also a different version of Kobe that I think we never really got to see Mike, because Mike was always winning chips with, like, what you would call a stack roster, playing against plumbers, as the young kids.
We are not calling those dudes plumbers.
None of them are plumbers. No.
We are not calling those dudes plumbers.
They were hardly plumbers. But Kobe learned how to lead. And I think that was one thing that there's a couple of things that I captured from Scottie's conversation. I was like, he has some realism left in him. One was that his favorite, his good was Magic Johnson. I think if you talk to a lot of old heads like my pop, his favorite player was Magic Johnson too. So I get, if that's your GOAT, that's fine. I'm not going to contest it.
Right.
The other thing he said, that Mike wasn't a great leader. And by all accounts, he probably wasn't, but he did what he needed to win. Was he your friend? No, but he figured out a way to win. I think Kobe figured out if he was going to win, he had to do it, you know, as being a leader. Talking up Paul Gasol, Meta World Peace, Lamar Odom, making them into championship players. That was Kobe raising the floor. And I think Kobe, I think, needs more credit for that, especially at the, when he did it at that point in his career. Because he was like, I mean, the younger heads were coming up on his tails. Like LeBron mm-hmm. was emerging, a lot of younger players, and he still got those two rings. So as much as like Jordan is better and he lived in the shadow of Mike for all of his career, he did damn well for himself. And he's the closest thing we ever see to MJ.
Look, I always say this, and this is no shot to Kobe Bryant, because we on Monday we get a special episode about Kobe Bryant. So this is not an insult. Mike is Cherry Coke. Kobe's Diet Coke. They're both Coke.
Yeah.
You know the difference.
Yeah.
But I think in those two seasons without Shaq, those three seasons without Shaq where he didn't have any level of stacked roster, Kobe, we got to see Kobe in full bloom in a way that he was no longer like restricted. And then Kobe also got a chance to see what it's like. Oh, man, this ain't really that fun. It is fun, but how fun is it if we're not making the playoffs and we're going home in round one, because I don't have guys playing next to me like the roster that I just mentioned to you guys. So it was a fascinating period in Kobe Bryant's career, and it reached a crescendo with 81 points that day. Still amazing to consider that the man took 46 shots.
Are we going to see 80 points again?
Ooh, are we going to see 80? I would say yes, because remember Luka scored like 73 last year mm-hmm. against Atlanta.
Donovan dropped 70.
And it looked easy because the rules, if we don't change the rules, if we don't allow for more physicality on the perimeter, which I think there was a lot more physicality even for Kobe Bryant because the floor was more compressed and Kobe had to navigate in smaller spaces. Now there's so much more space to cover. There's less impediment for guys as far as getting to the basket or shooting, you know, shooting threes. If they want to pull, they'll just pull. So if guy gets on the heater, he'll do it. My fear is that one of these coaches will, or one of the nerds will say, hey, we should pull player X out because we got a game in 2 nights and we need to sit him down. That's the fear that I have, that somebody will be on a heater and somebody will arbitrarily say, oh, he's at 35 minutes tonight. We need to pull him.
Yeah, I think we'll see 80.
Then I tell you who ain't pulling a player out of the game. Tom Thibodeau. Get 120 if you want to, baby. You playing these 40 minutes. Dan Titus, my man, appreciate you, bro.
No doubt, Vinny.
It is now time for my favorite part of the week with one of my favorite people, Ice Young, joining us for the last word. Ice, of course, you got a million and one jobs. Where actually are you right now?
Yes. Hey, fam. Right now, I'm in Providence, Rhode Island. I'm coming off a swing where I did 4 studio shows and games in the last 6 days. So I'm ready to come home. A little tired, but happy to be here as always. How are you?
I am wonderful. We can discuss other things off the clock because, you know, we got to talk about them off the clock. But while we're on the clock, Ice, Unrivaled has begun. The ratings are good on TNT. Like, everything looks first class. I'm very curious because it's 6 teams, it's 36 players. It seems like they play on Mondays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Is that when it is?
I think so, yeah.
What has stuck out to you early so far? Just even if the aesthetic is the thing that sticks out to you.
Yeah, one, I think the arena that they're using and just the signage everywhere is really cool. You can tell that there are fans in the building, but it's not like jam-packed. I feel like it's maybe mm-hmm. a select few. What stood out to me, I guess I would say first on the court, is just the pace of the game, right? Like, we knew it was going to be fast because it's 3v3, but then it's 3v3 full court, a condensed court, but still full court. So it gives you an appreciation for how much these women are in shape. And to be quite honest, how some of them might need to get in better shape. I think we saw through the first, you know, week of games, some players that are still adjusting. And then we saw players like the co-founder, Nafisa Collier, who's leading the league in scoring right now, who looks like, you know, she helped design this league. And so I feel like that's been really cool. Also, too, like, you know, they're all WNBA players, but they don't play on the same team. So it's also cool to see just the chemistry being built on the court with, you know, an Alyssa Thomas playing with Kayla McBride and, you know, and different things like that. So I've also enjoyed just the six person woman teams and how, you know, different players have shown themselves. I think Ryan Howard has been super impressive so far. She's a player that has played 3v3 in the Olympics. So she's familiar with this style. And she's been fun to watch. And so I think it's really an exciting time. You mentioned the ratings, which it's always good to see numbers back it up. But it really did. And there's no surprise there. And then I have to, too, like, shout out the broadcast team. I think it's so important, too, when you have voices, you know, on a new league, when you're introducing this to the world, that are close to these players, that know the stories, that represent them well. And so I think the broadcast team was well selected. I think they've done a great job of weaving in stories, you know, highlighting the fast paced game, and two, like, highlighting the things that are happening off the court around in the area. The fact that fans get a chance to meet these players and get autographs, like, it seems like a very nice experience. Honestly, I want to go to a game.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had plans. You know, the other thing that I was very curious about ICE was, and you kind of mentioned it with Fee. And I saw my friend Roz Golden Wood, she posted, like, hey, this is about to be the Nafisa Collier era. And it blew people up on Twitter. People were really, like, I don't know if it was annoyed was the word, upset, like, how are you not including Asia Wilson in this or whatever. But just in a general, who's putting the league on notice? Like, if this translates over, and it's a completely different game and everything else, but if this translates over to the next W season, which of course is months away, who's putting the league on notice? Who's saying that my game is in a different space than it was a few months ago?
Yeah, shout out to Roz. She's one of the sideline reporters, doing a great job. But I think that's a fair thing to say. First of all, it didn't just start just now with Nafisa Collier. If you were watching the WNBA finals, she was leading all players in scoring in the playoffs. I mean, she was dropping 30 left and right. Nafisa, one, played for Gina Auriemma at UConn, right? On a team with Breanna Stewart as well. So this is a player with a high pedigree that has always been very good. But now it seems like she's, you know, more coming into her own and has the opportunity to be the superstar. Also, one thing about Fee, like in Asia Wilson, I mean, she's extremely versatile and it's only growing. Her versatility, putting the ball on the floor. I love her mid-post game. I think one-on-one against anybody in the mid-post, she can score on. And she's a leader, too. So when you're watching her play these games, like, everything looks so mature, so effortless. I think she's a player that could put the league on notice. I think Ryan Howard is a player that maybe hasn't been on the best team to start her career. And so Atlanta has had some struggles, but they have a new coaching staff. Maybe they can get her into a better system. And then always Skylar Diggins-Smith. You know, one thing I'll say, Vinny, about the league is because they play to a target score, there's always a game winner. And that's pretty exciting to watch, you know? Yeah, and so you're always watching to see who gets the game winner. Alyssa Thomas had one where she had a one-handed offensive rebound putback that was a game winner. Skylar Diggins has already had two game winners. So I just would say, you know, those players are the ones that stick out right away. But I think Roz was spot on with what she said about Nafisa Collier. And I think a lot of us in the basketball world saw that happening in the finals last season.
Look, man, Rob's been doing this for a long time. So if she's saying it, I'm actually believing it. And people on Twitter, I'm going to not quite defer to your expertise in such thing. But one thing as we transition that I do believe that Ice loves talking about is how soft the NBA is. So given that, Ice, you got the choice of what we're going to talk first. We can either talk Cade Cunningham and Jalen Green not liking each other, or we can talk Steve Kerr, Jalen Brown, and Jason Tatum. Which one you hit on first?
Let's go Cade Cunningham first.
Okay. So Cade Cunningham is in my neck of the woods in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Number one pick in 21. Jalen Green, number two pick in 21. A lot of trash talk betwixt the two players. They played in Houston. The other day, Cade had a 19-point third quarter, dunked on everybody, and let them know it. And he went on Inside the NBA, or the TNT, excuse me, the pregame show yesterday, and basically said, you know, we don't got to be friends. Like, how warm does that make your heart feel in today's NBA that this is the future of the league?
I was grinning ear to ear because we don't have to be friends. All we have to be is respectful. To me, that's all you have to be is respectful. We are two guys that play the game at a very high level. You know, Cade also had mentioned that him and Jalen Green have been compared since AAU days. I mean, that's a mm-hmm. lot of basketball to be compared to someone over a decade or two almost. Like, and so I think it's fair. One, you know, comparison. Yes, there's a quote that says it's a thief of joy. But two, like when you're being compared to somebody that you don't feel like is as good as you, you know, or you're here and they're here, it also can piss you off a little bit. Stop comparing me to this person. I'm already better than them. Why don't y'all understand that? So I like that he said, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, in the words of Nas, and you youngins might not get this reference in the beginning of a song where he had a beef with a more famous rapper. He said, I know you're not talking about me, dog. You what? You know, that was literally the whole Jay-Z Nas thing. Ice, I know that just went over your head because y'all so young, but I promise you, we had rappers who were not named Jello Ball at a point in our collective lives who could actually rap and then have stage presence. So I get it. I understand it. The thing that gets me, Ice, is that when we talk about guys who are AAU babies and, oh, we've been playing against each other for however long, usually that means these guys are friends. Usually that means that they don't have to play on the same AAU team, but you have shared experiences. You've been in the same tournaments. You've been to the same cities as young players. It creates a bond. Ain't no bond with these two dudes. They flat out don't like each other.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. You're not going to like every person you compete against and play against. And because you're still competing against each other, I'm not letting that go. And to be quite honest, I might not let it go after we're done competing. Like, the only thing that I expect is for there to be a respect level. Otherwise, it's totally cool to me. If you don't like somebody, you compete against them, want to stomp on them every single time you see them, and you walk away amicably every single time. I think that, you know, we've talked about this, the LeBron era, right? Of, you know, going on yachts postseason with Steph Curry and Draymond and, you know, Dwayne Wade. And like, I just don't know how happy I would have been surrounded by, you know, the league champions, knowing that my team didn't get it, or we might have gotten beat by them for them to get there. I think, again, just as a competitor, it's sometimes tough to let that go. So I like, you know, the mutual respect, but them not liking each other. Again, we've talked about the NBA being a little soft in this way. So I also in a time, too, in which, you know, ratings are down, you need storylines like this to get people to tune in. The real hoopers of the world and those, like you said, we tune in for entertainment, not the nice stuff. They want to be entertained when they see these two guys play, or, you know, Cade on the pregame show talking about, you know, we don't need to talk before we see each other. Just get on the court and hoop and call it a day. I love it.
I love it, too. And I think one thing that the league office gets wrong, and perhaps this is very vestiges of 2004 with the Pistons Pacers brawl, they think the public does not want conflict. The public loves conflict. That's why people like me watch soap operas every day, because I actually love conflict. Yes, I don't watch soap operas. I watch one soap opera that I've been watching probably longer than you've been alive. You want me to say that?
General Hospital?
No. I used to watch that. I kind of dipped out of that. I watch The Young and the Restless every day. Me and Victor, I feel like I am in the world of Victor Newman. If I got to meet the real Eric Braeden, who plays Victor Newman, I feel like I could work for him and be like his black bodyguard or something like that. You know what I mean? Or you could give me a love scene.
I used to watch that. I only watched it when I was getting my hair done because my braider would watch it when I was a kid. So I got to watch it. That's cool. I support that.
Yes. I'm all in it. I ain't ashamed of it. I was going to say, no, I'm not ashamed of it at all. Now, speaking of soap operas, because we left this last one on the table, Jaylen Brown was not selected for the U.S. Men's Olympic team. Jason Tatum was selected for the U.S. Men's Olympic team, but it was like he might as well not have been there, right? Mm. The Boston Celtics go into Chase Center, wax the Warriors by 40 points. It might have been the worst beating at home of the Steve Kerr era. And after the game, it looked very much like Steve Kerr was trying to greet both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And Jason Tatum, you kind of see someone in your periphery, but you don't want to acknowledge them because you ain't trying to see them. It looked very much like, I ain't trying to see this dude. I got beef with this dude. I don't know if that's beef that I'd necessarily abide by if I'm Jason Tatum, to be perfectly honest. But where do you sit on this?
I agree. First of all, here's what I'll say. It's understanding for Jason Tatum to have a little bit of beef, right? You went all the way to the Olympics. You played, I think, 11 minutes or something like that. But
he played more than that.
But your team still won a gold medal. Right. Like, at the end of the day, the goal was accomplished. And obviously, we know who he was sitting behind. Steph and LeBron and KD, who if Jason had played more, they might have came home with silver. I feel comfortable saying that. So I understand, again, as a competitor, the beef that exists. But then there's the respect factor that you don't know what's going to happen in the next 4 years. You don't know who will be the coach. You don't know how much of a role Steve Kerr will play. And so it's just important to be, respectful. It's just important to be respectful. I will say in the clip, obviously he's talking to Steph. And so they're really close. But you can tell that he didn't really, turn to Steve, look at him, maybe even acknowledge his presence. It just was kind of like he was locked in to, his conversation with Steph Curry. He didn't say anything. But on the other hand, though, I do think Steve Kerr walked away I felt ignored. I felt like nobody wanted to speak to me.
I'm going to tell you like this. Ain't nothing them dudes talking about that. That is that damn interesting. Okay. Fact. One, Steph Curry just got his ass kicked by 40. on MLK Day. Ain't funny. You got to go in your locker room back with these guys that you like, man, I can't win with them. And I'm not going to win with them. And I'm going to see a bit kiki and laughing with Jason Tatum. All right, cool. Jason Tatum knew Steve Kerr was there. He knew. He just stayed a little bit longer. You want to know how? Because sometimes, I can admit this. If I'm around people and I see somebody that I really don't want to speak to, it may not be that I don't like you. It just may be that I don't feel like speaking to you and you're not important enough for me to break my stride. Break my stride in walking or break my stride in this conversation. I'm going to hold on just a little bit longer. I'm just going to talk to this person about a completely different subject that's got nothing to do with nothing until you get the picture to go the hell away.
Yeah.
We do that. My thing about Tatum, though, Ice is, it's to your point. He wasn't playing well when he was out there. He was kind of in a numbers crunch with LeBron playing well, KD when he came back playing well, Ant, Book, it was hard for him to find a place to fit. And he wasn't going to be out there diving on the floor for the loose balls, doing the dirty work. Jason Tatum wanted to dribble the air off the ball. That wasn't going to happen. And the Olympics were not this sort of dream team. We're blowing everybody out and everybody's just happy to be on the same floor with us. Everybody was coming to win. So I'm with you. I do think Steve Kerr is not going to be the coach for the team in 28 in LA, which is going to be a completely interesting thing. Mm. And Tatum should be in position to be, a better player, right? Or a better fit for that Olympic team.
Yeah. I mean, with, some of the older guys that probably won't play in the next Olympics, it should be one in which he's one of the main focal points on the team. Right, barring no injuries or nothing crazy happening before 28. But it's just so interesting too, like the little pettiness and drama that exists, you know, just, I get not wanting to speak and, you know, Steve Kerr kind of walking away, but it's just a little pettiness too. But also I'll say this, the L I just gave y'all speaks loud enough. Like, I'm getting my lick back. If I'm Jason Tatum, you know, that's what I'm thinking too. Like, I got my lick back. I'm out of here. Every time I see y'all, it's blood in my eyes. It's red. I'm out here to kill.
I got no problem with beef. Like, for some reason, the only person, excuse me, the only person in the NBA annals that's allowed to be petty is Michael Jordan. Somehow, he's the only person that's allowed to have beef, that's allowed to figure things out and look a certain way. I'm all for it. You ain't got to like each other. You ain't got to sit on the same. You ain't got to do anything together at all. I live in Detroit. Y'all know where I sit on certain NBA beefs. If you don't know, you should know. Either way, I want more of it. And in 28, when LeBron decides that he's playing in yet another Olympics, then Jason Tatum's going to have to deal with this again. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Ice Young. Ice, thanks again for my most fun 15 minutes of the day. Appreciate you as always.
Thanks, fam.
Thanks to Dan and Ice for joining me today as usual. Thanks to producer Carter and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back Monday, as I just told you guys a little bit earlier, with a special episode on Kobe Bryant with J.A. Adande. Be sure to check in for that one. Until then, everybody be safe.